This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are dedicating the entire hour today to the death of Pope Francis on Monday. The reach of Catholicism in Illinois is significant. The Catholic Conference of Illinois says there are 3.5 million Illinoisans who are baptized. That's one in four of us. Nearly 1,000 parishes, hundreds of schools, dozens of hospitals, 11 colleges and universities. We are reflecting on Francis's life and legacy and how people in Illinois are thinking about the news. Tony in Champaign in our texting group said, despite heading an ancient institution, he always seemed to be cautious in his pronouncements as if still searching for the correct answers. That seemed real to me despite my, this is Tony saying, not being religious. We also got a voicemail.
Hello, this is Joe from Champaign. I grew up Catholic, attended Catholic school from K through 12, and even thought about becoming a priest. I think Papa Franco was the best pope in my lifetime. I mean, I've lived over 60 years. John Paul I and Pope Francis the Seventh or Sixth or something like that were two also pretty good popes in my lifetime. The other popes were pretty backward thinking. Francis was looking forward and was trying to bring the Catholic Church into the 21st century and having us really have really, really deep thoughts about what Jesus Christ really meant, what this concept of Jesus was in this day and age. I will miss him. I don't consider myself Catholic today, but my mom was a devout Catholic and attended Mass 10 days before she died at almost age 91. And she wasn't a big fan of his, but I am, and I appreciate him. Thank you.
And thank you for that message, Joe. You can still share your thoughts throughout the rest of the hour today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. What will you remember about Pope Francis? Do you think he changed the papacy and the church for the better or for the worse? And what will be his legacy? 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We are still hoping to hear from Cardinal Blaise Supich, Archbishop of Chicago, but we seem to be having some miscommunication or difficulty connecting with him. So we are going to move on to a panel of guests we have for the rest of our program today. We may break away from this if the Cardinal is able to join us. But joining me for the rest of the hour today is Father Ezequiel Sanchez, Rector for the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Des Plaines. Father Sanchez, thank you for taking the time to be with us today on the 21st show. Also with us is Father Chris House, who is pastor for Christ the King Church in Springfield. Father House, welcome to you as well.
Thank you, Brian.
And last but not least, Scott Morangiello is Associate Professor of Catholic Studies at DePaul University. Professor Morangiello, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Father House, I'm going to start with you. Just sort of top-line reaction. How did you react when you heard the news about Pope Francis?
Well, it was my alarm went off to get up in the morning to get ready for Mass and that, and my parochial vicar, my assistant, had left for vacation, and I had a text from him. It was just a copy of a news story that the Holy Father had died. So it was a rather quick adrenaline burst to get you up and moving. Honestly, when back in the springtime, earlier spring, late winter, when he had his hospitalization, and when he left the Gemelli Clinic to go back to the Vatican, just looking at him, I mean, God love him. He endured so much. Just, he looked like a man that was just, that was tired, but also kind of wondering, was he going home to die? But at the same time, we saw in him once again that resilience, that a man who seemed to beat the odds. And it was a surprise after he had been on the loggia at St. Peter's Basilica, been out there with the crowd and the Pope mobile, and then to receive that news the next thing.
And I understand now that we do have Cardinal Blaise Supich with us, so I'm going to pause our panel conversation and go now to him as the only Illinoisan who will have a say in the succession of Pope Francis. Cardinal Supich, thank you for making time to be with us today on the 21st show. And I believe you might be muted, sir. And all right, I'm going to reintroduce. Let me just say, if you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. Cardinal Supich, are you with us? All right. Well, while we try to sort out the technical aspects there, Father Ezequiel Sanchez, let me come back to you.
There you are.
Cardinal, you're here. All right. Thank.
All right. Someone muted me there, and I didn't know how to do that here. So.
Well, I appreciate you making the time to be with us. My condolences. Sure. I guess I'll begin with you, as I've been asking everyone. What was your sort of initial reaction to the news out of the Vatican yesterday?
Well, I was both stunned and also very sad to hear about this. And yet at the same time, as I reflected yesterday, a real sense of gratitude that we lived in a time when he was a pope, and that I was in some way able to collaborate with him in a very personal way.
You were one of the early appointees of his to a diocesan position in America. Can you talk about what that meant to you, what you understood your mission to be from him?
Well, as I said at the time when I was appointed, he as he told me, in fact, himself, he wanted to appoint a pastor. I think that has been his vision with regard to Episcopal appointments since he was elected. And I tried my best to live up to the standards that the church calls us to. I came from a much smaller diocese in Spokane and earlier in Rapid City. So being in Chicago was altogether different set of circumstances, but the same dynamics of being a pastor, I think, can be used wherever you're appointed.
Whenever somebody is leading a large organization, be it a political leader or a parish priest or the Pope of the entire Catholic faithful, there is a question of emphasis and messaging. And Pope Francis's message was certainly one of social justice, looking out for immigrants and the poor. This idea of the continuum of life, I think. Can you speak to that and how you saw that and how it might have differed from other periods in the church's sort of history and teaching?
Well, he was very set on making sure that we had a pastoral approach to our ministry. Yes, we teach dogma, we teach various aspects of doctrine of our church, but he wanted to make sure that we began in a very pastoral way. That wonderful text of the disciples after the events that happened in Jerusalem going on the road to Emmaus, Jesus comes into their midst, not telling them what to do, but listening first of all to what's in their hearts. And that is a starting point that he wanted to make sure that we understood. And part of that also was tied to the image of the church being a field hospital, making sure we go where people are really hurting before we begin to ask questions or talk to them about anything else. How do we bring healing to them in that moment?
And we heard from an earlier guest, a bishop downstate, saying, talking about the idea of being a listening church. Listening as well as preaching.
So yes. He said that on the 25th anniversary of the synods, he said, we have to be a teaching church, but also a listening church.
How do you think about there has been talk of sort of, how would you say, dissension, right? Political dissension, the questions over de-emphasizing the Latin Mass, which of course used to be the only Mass until Vatican II, and then it was gaining in popularity, and he sort of pushed that to the side. There is this idea where some people feel he may have gone too far. He didn't always, he didn't change necessarily rules on, for example, welcoming divorced Catholics or people who are LGBT, but he did sort of strike a more conciliatory or welcoming sort of rhetoric. How do you think about that, and how do you think about some of the dissension that that's caused?
Well, I think that there's always been people disagreeing with one or the other aspects of a leader in the church, And that's not anything new. And I would also say that those who would criticize him, they're loud, but they're not large. You talk to the vast majority of Catholics today, and they see that the approach the Holy Father is taking, that he was taking, was something that was very welcomed by them. So I would say that we've always had that kind of division in terms of opinions. But I think that he held the vast majority of Catholics with him as he moved through the years.
And how have you seen his sort of emphasis, his leadership, sort of, how do I say it, on the ground in the communities where you serve?
Well, I see that right now, of course, in terms of the mourning that's going on, people coming to church to pray for him. I imagine we'll have a nice attendance tomorrow for the Mass at the cathedral. But I am seeing that outpouring wherever I go, and you see comments of people in the media about that. So really was the people's pope, as people are as the media now is reporting.
You are in one of the more exclusive electorates in the world, in that you are a member of the College of Cardinals. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe you are still of voting age in that group that will select Pope Francis's successor. Can you talk a little bit about how you are taking on that responsibility, how you are thinking about that?
Well, I'm learning. This is my first time. There will be meetings of the Cardinals once I get to Rome. So I'll learn more about that. There are, of course, written standards already that I can look at, but I'm just going to wait and listen to the directives that will be given to us by the Camerlingo.
How are you thinking about because there is, again, this question of emphasis, who is selected? Is it somebody from outside Europe? Francis was the first pope from the Americas. He was the first to choose the name Francis, part of his, you know, sort of question of what he emphasized. How are you thinking about the direction the church might go?
Well, to be honest with you, with the death of the Pope so very fresh, I'm going to give time, my thoughts and my heart over to making sure that mourning and time of grief is something that's respected. So I'm really not in a moment to be able to talk about what happens next. I want to go to the funeral on Saturday, and then there'll be time enough for me to give some thought to those kinds of questions.
That's very fair. I would end by asking you if you have any prayers or devotions you might recommend for the faithful during this time.
Well, I think that what was very close to the Holy Father were the scriptures. And so to take some of these scriptures that we have in this season following the celebration of Easter and just meditate on those stories of what those early disciples experienced. Because the Pope really felt that we needed to have a dialogue, not just among ourselves, but with the Word of God. So I would say go to those stories, particularly in John's Gospel and Luke's Gospel, and see those as opportunities in which you can reflect on the great gift that Pope Francis was to us.
Cardinal Blaise Supich, thank you so much for spending the time with us today on the 21st
Thanks,
Show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are going to continue now talking about the life and legacy of Pope Francis. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. We're going to return to our panel, Father Ezequiel Sanchez, rector for the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Des Plaines, Father Chris House, pastor for Christ the King Church in Springfield, and Scott Morangiello, associate professor of Catholic Studies at DePaul University. And Father Sanchez, I'm going to come to you now, especially because Pope Francis was the first pope from Latin America. How are you thinking about that with news of his passing?
Well, we refer to him as the first pope of the Americas. So anybody on this side of the ocean, really. That's the call that John Paul II gave us, and so I highlight that. When I heard that it was Cardinal Bergoglio from Argentina, we were ecstatic because this would be the first time in the history of Christianity that someone outside of the continent of Europe was chosen. And when people ask, what impact does he have in terms of the culture or what that meaning might have, I think it would be similar to those that would happen to everyone else, whether you're Italian, Polish, German, or whatever. There is a sense of pride in the community for those who have been called to extraordinary leadership and who will clearly be making a major contribution to humanity, but most especially to the church.
Professor Morangiello, just about a minute and a half until we need to take a break, and I have to hold you to that, but briefly, can you just talk or maybe begin the conversation about how Pope Francis's tenure differed from that of his predecessors?
Well, I think that a lot of the perception of Pope Francis, especially in the U.S., differed from how earlier popes were perceived, and so I see it in my students. They knew things about Pope Francis and kind of his approach to the papacy that they wouldn't, 15 years ago when I was teaching and Pope Benedict was Pope. So I think the perception mattered a lot. And in dealing with young people, their approach to the church was very much shaped by Pope Francis himself.
All right, we are going to continue this conversation after a short break. We are talking about the life and legacy of Pope Francis. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. I'm going to share a couple of more text messages we got. Anne in Urbana said, he was a truly holy man who embodied what is best about Christianity, humble, compassionate, and a champion for the least, the last, and the lost. We also heard from Lloyd and Danville, who said, as an African-American Catholic, I will remember how current his ministry was and how traditional his leadership was to Catholics around the world. His legacy will be how he held the world accountable for its deeds to their fellow man. Addressing the issue of priests taking advantage of boys will also be his legacy. 800-222-9455. If you want to join us today, we will continue after a short break. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the life and legacy of Pope Francis, who was the leader of the Catholic Church. 3.5 million Illinoisans are said to be Catholic. That's according to the Catholic Conference of Illinois. There are dozens, hundreds really, of schools, hospitals, universities, parishes across the 21st state. We heard a lot from you on this. Helen in Springfield sent us a text message. I feel the loss of Pope Francis, even though I'm a Protestant. He stressed compassion for the poor and a number of initiatives that were groundbreaking for Catholics, such as appointing a woman as a department head at the Vatican. Although the Pope's views and actions caused friction with less progressive Catholics, I believe his position of Pope has been an important one throughout the world. In recent years, I joined Catholics in mourning the Pope's death. We also heard from Christopher in Brimfield, who said, I will always remember his love for the common good, a good man who will be loved for what he did, not just what he said. Helen and Christopher, thank you for that. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. And let's go now to the phones. Paul is on line 2 from Urbana. Paul, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I think it's Earth Day, it's worth to note another thing about the man. He was trained in chemistry in Argentina, quite accomplished in what he did. And he used his position as the Vatican to issue an encyclical on climate change, as well as convene at least a couple of conferences. And that's what I admire about him the most, I think, along with all the other things that are being said.
All right, Paul. Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate that. Again, if you want to join us, 800-222-9455. And I do want to come back to that question in a moment of the idea of the perception of him, especially among progressives in America, and you know what he was actually saying and how closely that aligns or doesn't align. My guests for the last part of our program today are Scott Morangiello, Associate Professor of Catholic Studies at DePaul University, Father Chris House, Pastor for Christ the King Church in Springfield, and Father Ezequiel Sanchez, Rector for Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Des Plaines, Illinois. Father House, let me come back to you. At a parish level, how did you see Francis's teachings differences under him playing out sort of on the street, so to speak?
Well, one of the things that was kind of really unfolding, especially more in the past couple of years, was this emphasis on synodality. We heard a lot about the synod on synodality, and at times people didn't know what to do with that. They got nervous about it because, you know, synodality.
Say, maybe you can explain what that means to our lay listeners.
Right. Well, the whole point, basically, a synod is a gathering, and it goes back to the earliest days of the church, and it's a gathering of the faithful. And so in Rome for the past couple of years, there's been this synod on synodality where he's been bringing a lot of people to the table to talk. And some people got nervous about that. But the Holy Father was very clear. He goes, this is not a parliament. This is about everybody sitting down. He really was going back to this notion coming out of the Second Vatican Council from Lumen Gentium, which is one of the major documents that came out, where basically seeing the church, that all of us together are the people of God, laity, clergy, religious, all of us together are the people of God. We're all on a journey together, and we have to walk together and to listen to each other. And so on a parish level, that's very important. In parishes, we have councils, we have committees. It's on a parish level, diocesan level, and even on the universal level. But at times, one could argue they're not always used well, or they're not used to their fullest extent or potential. And I think the Holy Father was in varied ways trying to get us back to that, that, you know, we all are in different places, but we're all trying to get to the same place. We're all trying to get to the kingdom. And so we're on that journey together, and we need to listen to each other. It doesn't mean that we were always going to get our way, or it doesn't mean that everything was going to become a democratic initiative in the church, but everybody needed to be listened to, respected, and met with compassion. And I think that resounded on all levels of the church, especially for the average parishioner.
Father Sanchez, same question to you. How did you see his life? And I guess beyond the question of his identity, or although maybe perhaps that was most salient for some of your parishioners, but how did you see that playing out in your work?
Well, as I was mentioning, the context is the person. Pope Francis came from a world of poverty, and he was very attuned as to the reasons for poverty. So he was very schooled on the impact of injustice in the world. And so, you know, all the different leaders that we have, well, they come with their history, their education, their formation, and Jesuit training. So when the Holy Father stepped out, and started talking in a manner that was quite different than people were used to. One of the challenges, I think, as Father was saying, the synodality challenge is we should listen to one another. And the problem is that a lot of people don't like what they hear from each other. And it's quite the challenge. It's quite the challenge for some folks to listen to some uncomfortable things or not listen to the point that you've already made up a decision or you thought you heard something, but it wasn't really what they really said or what they really meant. So it's a laborious endeavor the Holy Father invited us to, but I think very necessary. So he's coming from a context where people don't listen to each other, and he sees the very need that can't happen within Christ's church.
Professor Morangiello, I want to ask you about, you had this comment, or you made this mention earlier of the idea of the perception of the Pope in America, especially. I was reading in Commonweal yesterday a piece that talked about Francis deploying a sort of strategic ambiguity, I'm quoting now, when it came to doctrinal issues, allowing the old order to carry alongside clear messages about the need for a new pastoral praxis, right? So issues of LGBTQ Catholics. Some of that remains on shakier ground. How can you just talk about the distinction between how Francis was perceived in America and maybe whether sometimes that got ahead of what he had actually intended or had actually said?
Yeah, so maybe a good way for me to answer that is by talking kind of about the students that I see every day. And I think young people especially are really good at what, in Catcher in the Rye, like figuring out phonies. And what I think what draws people, I think, ultimately to Christianity is witnessing actual Christians live a life that accords with what Jesus teaches and what Jesus did. And I think that the students really saw that in Pope Francis, in the way he lived his life, in the way, in his writings, one of the callers mentioned earlier about the environment, so that students who read Laudato Si, one of his encyclicals, really kind of found that powerful. And so when I said perception earlier, what I meant by that was not so much, you know, we Christianity isn't in the first instance a set of rules. Christianity is in the first instance a way of life. And those rules try to help us live the way of life, but it's the way of life that's important. And I think for my students and for me personally, for the parishioners I help out at Mary Mother of God Parish on the north side of Chicago, it's not the rules that bring people to church. It's Jesus who brings people to church, and it's people who act like Jesus who bring people to church. And I think Francis was such a wonderful example of that for just billions of people around the world.
Father House, how have you seen that playing out in your own parish work?
I think you're talking about, you know, it's a way of life, and I think that's one thing that people found attractive about Pope Francis was that he made Christianity, he made discipleship, Catholicism, the way he lived it on the public stage, he made that very tangible for people. He made that very appealing. The whole point of how he was very much about going out to the marginalized, to the forgotten, making sure that people felt seen who had previously felt invisible. And so going with the professor talked about that, you know, it was not about the rules. The rules are there to help us. But Francis very much wanted us to understand the heart of the gospel, and that Jesus Christ is the heart of the gospel and the love that he has for everybody. And I think the Holy Father really wanted people to truly to know that, not just academically, not just in the mind, but truly to experience that in their heart and in their everyday living, and not just to experience, but then to share that, to become a vehicle for that for other people around them.
Father Sanchez, can you talk about how Pope Francis made immigration and immigrant rights and migrant rights a focal point of his public communications?
Well, yeah, this was very close to his heart. His parents were immigrants, immigrants from Italy to Argentina. And so being there, he saw the reason why people have to move, not only in Latin America, but all around the world. I think sometimes we forget that he's perched to see the world and everything that's happening in the world and the suffering of the community. So, you know, he had a very close relationship with people who have to immigrate and their experiences of that. I think one of the things that concerns him about the language that's especially now more so being used for people who have immigrated, they're looked at, they're often used words such as people are illegal, they broke a rule, and I keep telling people, if you get a speeding ticket, are you a criminal? I mean, you're using these words as though they have no proportionality. And that's what he was really trying to tell the people. I think sometimes that gets missed. And so his concern was, don't make people into a thing or a number. They are real people with real struggles, of course, without backing down from realizing that, you know, everybody, including countries, have limits of what they can do. But it's incumbent about not just one country, but the whole society to figure out how do we bring about a more just society without losing their humanity, and the other way around, as his encyclical so beautifully say, they're human beings. And so coming to Jesus for us spiritually, it really becomes his favorite word is acompañamiento, which means accompaniment. He says, you got to walk their walk. We're all pilgrims headed for a place not of here, you know.
Father House, I wonder what you see as the legacy long-term of Pope Francis, as the church will be, you know, under new leadership soon. What do you hope will carry forward?
Yeah, in my work, besides being pastor, I'm also a canonist in our diocese. And really two of the hallmarks there that maybe won't always be noticed was that one of them is the synodality that he pushed, but also that the Holy Father, he did a lot of changes in canon law, and a lot of that was to protect people. Especially, he really kind of, since 2021, was about trying to curtail abuse of power. And synodality is one of those tools by which that abuse could be curtailed. But he was really kind of revolutionary in, even before those changes, putting out some documents that basically put the bishops of the world on notice for how they would handle such cases with abuse, and that if they were even simply found to be negligent, that they could be removed from power. So really just that whole sense of accountability that the Holy Father was calling for, that all of us in every way are accountable before the Lord, but no one's exempt from that in the church. Once again, going back to that whole notion of the people of God, that we're all in this together, but there's no special class within the church.
And Professor Morangelo, I think probably the last question today to you, since you do deal with young people are the future of the church, but there has been this increasing non-affiliation. I'm not sure you see that being at a Catholic university, but how are you thinking about the future of the church with regard to Francis's legacy, and especially how young people fit into that picture?
Yeah, that's obviously a super important question. And I would push back. So DePaul's a Catholic university, but our student population we don't have a very high Catholic population of students. And I have actually found that, again, the point about witness and living in a certain way of life, the more students find out about what Christianity is actually all about, and the more they see Pope Francis as a model for that, the more interested they became in Christianity. I had one student who became Catholic over the weekend from nothing. So I think, and this is actually going to sound maybe a little odd, but I think one of Pope Francis's greatest legacies will be because exactly what Father House said, synodality, one of Pope Francis's, I think, great legacies will be a little less importance on the Pope and a little more emphasis on individual Catholics, parish communities, kind of taking responsibility for the work of living a Christian life themselves, and not kind of worrying about, well, the Pope has to do that work. No, that every individual Christian has to live in such a way that he or she is loving in the way that God wants people to love. And I find that with my students, the more emphasis is on that, the more emphasis is on living in a certain way, loving others, providing for the poor, welcoming the stranger, etc., the more they find Christianity attractive.
We'll have to leave it there. Professor Morangelo, Father House, Father Sanchez, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show, Remembering Pope Francis. That is it. Our show is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thank you for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.